Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's happening, everyone? It's Monday, and that means it's new podcast day. This week on Ranching Reboot, we're rebooting your thinking about chickens with the president of Chickenlandia. But first, a message from our sponsors. Did y'all know Land Trust's dedication to making sure that sportsmen have a place to hunt goes past not just today, but far into the future? Land Trust is focused on enhancing the management of wildlife on rural private lands by connecting with many conservation groups. When you complete a trip with Land Trust and one of their private landowner partners, Land Trust will send a payment to the appropriate conservation organization for that species. Really great organizations like Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, and the National Wild Turkey Federation, just to name a few. These great groups help fund research studies, they hold promotional events, and have experiences for members such as youth, special needs, and veterans. The partnership with these conservation groups is core to Land Trust's mission to help improve habitat. Certain species-oriented advice is available for things like habitat management, carrying capacity, food plot management, predator management, and much more. Land Trust is such a great platform for both landowners and sportsmen, so what are you waiting for? Sign up today at www.landtrust.com/reboot or just click the link in the show notes. All right, my guest this week shares her transformative journey from Hollywood dreams to being a backyard chicken educator. We delve into the therapeutic power of mindful chicken keeping and community connection. Please welcome the president of Chickenlandia, Dahlia Monteroso. Well, Dahlia, good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's unseasonably cold here after having 70s and 80s and like spending 2 weeks at the beginning of the month in Hawaii. That was kind of nice. So got used to warm weather.
You're still in Hawaii.
It's fake. I got a new computer because trying to edit the videos for the podcast, my 5-year-old laptop was going, no, sir. So
yeah, it may as well be 50 years old at that point. It's like,
So the people that use that watch the video version, like they're used to seeing pictures of my cows and a pond and all kinds of stuff. Sorry. I made the decision to use this computer instead of the laptop about like an hour ago, and I didn't have time to find a background file. So I guess tropical is what we get
today.
I think
it's great. I love it.
It looked like the least worst of the virtual backgrounds.
Yes.
It is kind of. If I could get one of these, like with cows kind of moving in the background and grass waving, like that would be awesome.
I think there's a chicken one, but I don't know. I'm so like computer illiterate that I don't know how to do it. So
that would be interesting. Like have your virtual background just be like a chicken camera and see your chickens out in the yard.
Yes.
So you like chickens then?
I love chickens. Like it's extreme. Extreme love.
Okay. How extreme?
They completely changed my life. You know, I was on a total different trajectory. At one point, I thought I was going to be the next great American filmmaker. I was in Los Angeles. You know, that's what I was going to do. I was there to be a writer and to a director and all of that. I had really big dreams. And somehow I have ended up in the Pacific Northwest. I don't live in Hollywood anymore.
That's probably not a bad thing.
And I am a backyard. I am a backyard chicken educator.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah.
So now I got to know, how did you go from trying to be a filmmaker to being the chicken lady?
I feel like it was divine intervention, but I'll tell you the whole, you know, I'll back up a little bit. So yes, I was in Hollywood. I worked as a personal assistant. I worked at Lifetime Television for a little while. Met my husband. And this whole time I'm like playing the Hollywood game, trying to like get into the industry. And it's a fast paced, tough game down there. And I'm realizing, I don't know if this is for me. You know, I met the man that became my husband. We got married. We started talking about having kids. And I was like, I just don't want to have kids in Los Angeles. Nothing against Los Angeles, but there's a lot of traffic. And I don't like
that.
A lot of people, a lot of traffic. It's just a different environment. I wanted to go somewhere slower paced. And I really thought at that point, I'm ready for this. You know, I'm ready to let go of this. And so we did. My husband still works in the entertainment industry. He can live anywhere and do what he does. But for me, it was like, okay, I'm not pursuing this dream anymore. Even though it was the dream I had from, you know, the time I was a little kid. So we moved to Bellingham, Washington. That's where we live now. And I had my first child, little boy. He was about 18 months old. And I really started to struggle. And I'm really candid about this. I talk about it a lot because I think it's not talked about enough. But I had a pretty severe case of postpartum depression.
Okay.
And then on top of that, I was mourning the loss of this dream and not really knowing who I was anymore. Like, I knew I was a mother and a wife, and I loved that. But I was like, who, you know, what is my identity beyond other people that need me? You know, who am I anymore? What is my purpose? So naturally at that point I said, I'm going to get some chickens. I don't know why. I don't know, you know, just one day it came to me, oh, I'm going to get some chickens. That's what I'm going to do. It'll be like my hobby. And I lived in what you would call a suburban area.
Okay.
I was in a subdivision, not a huge backyard. It was bigger than some backyards, but not huge. I had never had any kind of farm animal my whole life. I did not grow up like that. I grew up in the suburbs. In my adult life, I moved from city to city. I had never even held, I think I held a baby chick one time in Guatemala. I had traveled to Guatemala, and one of my aunts was a crazy chicken lady, and I held a baby chick.
So I read in some of your info that your parents were from Guatemala.
Yes. Yes. My dad has passed away. My mom is from Guatemala. Both of them immigrated here from Guatemala. And so that's where my heritage is.
And it kind of, sorry to get you off track, but
no, that's didn't, okay.
Isn't Guatemala one of the places that chickens are kind of native?
Well, they're everywhere. You know, if you go there and you're in the city, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're in the city, if you're in the country, you're going to hear roosters crowing. You're going to see chickens. And that's one of the reasons why I get, especially in recent years, I hear a lot of people and educators talking about how expensive it is to keep chickens. And I get frustrated by that because I want this to be accessible to everybody. I think it's very important, not just for those people's families, but also for our communities and for the world. I think it's very important for everybody to have access to this. But you can go to the poorest places in the world and you will find poor people and their chickens. So...
There were feral chickens running around Hawaii, and it was wild. They look like 2-pound wellspringers.
Yes.
And go ahead.
They're a little more wild. Those are the kinds of chickens that do better, you know, as feral chickens. The chickens that we see that we keep here in the United States and in across the Western world in our backyards, most of them would not last very long in the wild, but these smaller kind of light breed chickens that are really good foragers, they can fly better than a lot of the heavier breeds. Those are the ones you're going to see running around in Hawaii and also running around in other places in the world. But yeah, Kauai, that's, you know, Chicken Island. I don't know where you were,
Oahu.
but oh yeah, I mean, there's going to be chickens everywhere, but Kauai is like Chicken Island.
So we've had chickens for several years. I grew up, my parents had chickens and geese and ducks and turkeys and guineas, and I think there was even a peacock or two running around. I don't like geese. Geese are assholes. Let's just get that out of the way.
Okay, I'm scared of geese. Don't.
Well, people have guard geese for a reason. I
Yeah.
mean, they're jerks. Crap, forgot what I was saying.
Oh,
Oh,
sorry.
so yeah, so I've been around chickens enough. I like to eat chicken. The thing that really, really amazed me is when we were in Hawaii, it was the second or third day there. I'm just checking stuff off the list. Like first day there, got to see turtles and be in the water with turtles. So I was like, all right, we're gonna check that one off. I can go home now. So the second or third day we were there, we visited a coffee farm. I mean, we just happened along it alongside of the road. Okay, cool. And now I am a coffee guy. I love coffee. I can only have 2 cups a day or else I don't sleep. But so we pulled in this coffee farm to get some coffee, and there was a little grove where you could go out amongst the coffee trees. So we're out there, walking around, just checking it out, seeing what it's like. Well, there's chickens running around everywhere. And not just roosters, not just, hens and layers, but there was hens running around with a package of 9 or 10 chicks. And there were
Yes.
several of those. And I don't know why natural mothering behavior is so strange to see in the wild, but that's just not what we're used to with seeing our chickens. Because here, the way we've raised our chickens and bred our chickens in this country, they're stupid and they don't know how to raise their own young, right? We kind of have to do it for them. But it was just amazing to see a hen in the wild taking care of her chicks. I thought that was really cool and I wanted to share.
Yeah, and I, you know, that's another thing. I really encourage people to think about chickens outside of how we do chicken keeping, certainly in the last 50 years, in the Western world. Like modern chicken keeping is very different from what we'll see in other places in the world. And I think when it comes to raising chickens and certainly keeping them healthy, and having a less stressful experience, especially if you're from the city, you've never done anything like this before. I really encourage people to keep it as close to nature and their natural experience as possible, because that's how it's supposed to be. And when we practice that, it automatically becomes more instinctual for us. The chickens are going to be healthier, and it's going to be cheaper. And those are things that are really important to me. I want that for us. I have seen, you know, chicken keeping has become something that was throughout millennia, it's something very sustainable. It has always been that we have this symbiotic relationship with the chicken. They eat what we waste. And now I see that it has become something that is using resources, and that requires a certain level of income in order to start. And this is the kind of the mentality that comes from really from factory farming. And so I'm trying to like reverse that with what I'm trying to do. And then I
Okay.
also want to bring, you know, I talk a lot about just the meaning of chicken keeping, what it's meant in my life, what it has done for me, and what it can mean for someone just to keep a few chickens in their backyard, how that can really change someone's life.
You brought up a couple things, and let's be honest. Chicken barns that have 100,000 birds, that's the reason the vegans have an animal welfare argument, period.
Oh
And
yeah.
we raised we, my wife did a set of meat birds last year, and compared to the chickens that we've been keeping now, I talked about how the hens in Hawaii raise their own. Well, we keep our own eggs, and we try to incubate and hatch our own eggs from our own chickens because, selection theory. We want chickens that thrive here, that'll produce well here, so we try to granted, it's not like a cow calf where it's like, okay, well, that calf came out of this bull and that's a dink calf, so we're just going to get rid of this cow. It's a little bit harder with the way that we keep our chickens, and maybe we're doing it wrong, but it's kind of hard to sort out which, you know, which eggs came from which hen, which rooster. Kind of have to see what pops out to see what pops out. But over a long enough period, I think that keeping our eggs and incubating our eggs, we're going to have a more resilient chicken flock genetically, because that those genetics have been from here and been raised here. So when you said factory farming, you also said modern chicken keeping. And it, just for context, what are you saying when you're saying modern chicken keeping?
This idea that you have to spend a crazy amount of money on a coop. I'm not saying don't spend a crazy amount of money on a coop, because that's absolutely what I did. That's a lot of money on a coop. Okay. But chickens are very resilient. Traditionally, they have slept in trees. My great grandmother, you know, I mean, you have to consider, of course, the environment that you live in, the climate that you're in. But what I really want people to do is not overcomplicate things. There is an idea that chickens can only eat chicken feed. And if they don't just eat chicken feed, then you're doing something wrong. Well, that's very expensive for a lot of people.
I mean, and feed companies will tell you that chickens can only eat chicken feed.
Absolutely. And if you're raising literally a million chickens in a building, you know, you have to have such high control of everything that goes into their bodies, of everything that goes into that building. It has to be as sterile in as environment as you can make it, because it is not conducive to life.
And it's not conducive to life because it's just constantly carpet bombed with antibiotics and the water in and the feed.
Yes, it's just it is so far from the natural experience. But the problem is that that's where the money is. You know, the poultry industry obviously is very powerful. They have a lot of money. And I'm not, I, one thing I do want to say is I'm not speaking poorly of poultry farmers. People have put food on their table. You know, they have to work. Many people, they just have to work within the system. And they also wish the system would change, but it is what it is.
I'm with you 100%. Like, when I think about like the working conditions in a chicken barn, no matter where it is, I it's really hard for me to see how people are happy with that, the people that work in there.
Oh, I'm sure they're not.
They're probably just doing it for a job, because, you know, they got to feed their family and they're one paycheck away from being bankrupt. And that's the situation for most people. And like, they're afraid to speak out. But then again, you know, we have this huge, the way the chicken industry has taken over. Have you, I think the book is The Meat Racket by Christopher Leonard.
I have not read that.
He talks about how Tyson basically took over the chicken industry. And then kind of lays out the roadmap for how they will eventually chickenize the beef industry. I mean, they did it to pork. There's another great book out there, Wastelands, that talks about pork CAFOs in coastal North Carolina and like what the waste is doing to the neighbors. Anyway, I think what it gets down to is almost everybody, if you sit down and have a conversation with them, will see that system of CAFOs is not great and see the problems with it. But the scale, I think there's some guy in Virginia that said one out of every three households, if they had three chickens, there'd be no more food waste problem. And we wouldn't need it. We wouldn't need we wouldn't need factory farms for chicken if one out of three people kept chickens.
Yeah, there is very likely some truth to that. I do try and remind people that when we're having these discussions, it is very important to also think about the cities, because I think, you know, we have, like, when we talk about a sustainable future, we talk about sustainable farming, a lot of times we're saying, okay, we need to support these small farms. We need to support farmers markets and all that. And that is all great. That is wonderful. But there are a lot of people in the city. And if tomorrow all the factory farms just shut down, let's say, you know, okay, this is it. We're shutting down all the factory farms. People would starve. Like there are people that rely on this system that we have set up that supplies a lot of people with cheap food. So part of my goal is to get more, I want more people in the city and the suburbs to keep chickens, but I also want to see like community chickens. I want to see apartment buildings having not just a community garden, but a chicken coop for every apartment building. I'd love to see chickens on top of rooftops, you know, all of that. And I think it's really important because I don't think that, a lot of us have these great visions and we want to see this more sustainable future and we want to see a future without factory farms, but we will not get there unless we are together, the not just the rural communities, but also the urban communities. Like we have to get together and work together and make that happen. But one point I wanted to make earlier, just about, the factory farms and the fact that, you know, all the power that they have, that's really where the money and the research goes, is to factory farms. And that's where the science comes, you know, that's where the science goes, because that's where the money is. So the information that we get as people that just have backyard chickens, a lot of it is coming from, you know, from these studies that are done in factory farm conditions. And so the information we're getting is not really as applicable in our situation as it would be in a factory farm. So a chicken that is living in someone's backyard, that is scratching the earth, that is feeling the air, you know, it's getting kitchen scraps, it has some kind of greenery in its diet, it's eating bugs, that chicken is having a completely different experience than a chicken living in a factory farm.
Yeah, so for sure.
That's why I'm not like anti-science or anything like that. I get a lot of flack from people. That's not what I'm saying. But I think we do have to take a lot of the information that we get with a grain of salt and just understand where it's coming from. So that we can, when we're telling ourselves, you know what, I want to do this in a more natural way, but the information I'm getting is not matching that. You know, am I doing it wrong? I would say to that person, what you're experiencing is a deep understanding that has existed throughout the ages, you know, over all the time that human beings have kept chickens. So follow that. For the most part, you're going to be right about that.
So just sitting here thinking, you know, it is a very interesting problem. How do we feed New York City or Chicago or LA without CAFOs? And I do not have a solution at all. I don't. I think it's like way too idealistic to think that, you know, small local community agriculture can feed Los Angeles. Would I like to see that happen? Someday, I think we can get there. It's going to take a lot of work.
Yes.
CAFOs don't end, they're not going to end overnight. Like, even if Cory Booker and Elizabeth Warren have their way, they're not ending overnight. It's going to take a long time for that system to unwind and change without major disruptions. And we can't have major disruptions in our food supply. Like, people got to eat.
Yes.
100%. And the scary thing is there's only like 3 days of food stored up in major metro areas and big cities. I mean, probably even in my town, there might be 3 days worth of food at the grocery store. If the trucks quit running, things get interesting real quick. And that's when things like community chickens are going to be important. Can you maybe expand on that concept a little bit? What you meant by community chickens?
Well, I have a friend in Baltimore. He has a community. There was a community garden, and right in the inner city, and he decided I'm going to raise some chickens in this community garden and got some funding for it. Got the, you know, I don't want to like misrepresent the story, so I don't know exactly how it happened, but he ended up having a community chicken coop within this community garden setting.
Okay.
And just to tell you, just to let you know how important something like this is, during the shortage, I think it was it 2022 in the spring? There was that like egg shortage and
Yes.
price of eggs shot through the roof. And that was very concerning. And he had the only eggs in that neighborhood. And he, I mean, the neighborhood was able to have eggs during that time. And I thought, you know, just hearing that story, I thought that that was such so important to know and to understand, that it is going to take communities. It is going to take some sacrifice in the cities. I know a lot of people like I actually think, well, I don't even know if I should bring this up because people get mad, but I actually think we should have roosters in the city. Like, I don't think roosters should be illegal in the city because that is part of the sustainability of keeping chickens. Like, if you want to continue, if you want to incubate your own eggs, you don't want to have chickens shipped to you or whatever, you need to have a rooster. And also, there are people that are like, well, I don't want to get chickens because what if I get a rooster and or I get a couple roosters and I don't know what to do and I can't eat it. You know, I mean, there's many people like that.
So there are places where you can't have a rooster in town.
Oh yeah. Like most cities that have ordinances will say you cannot have a rooster.
Okay, just for clarity, I am a country boy.
Oh
I've
boy.
lived in the country my whole life. I've only lived in town when I was in the Navy, and I lived in a couple apartments. I did buy a house, but it wasn't in an HOA, and I really didn't pay much attention because keeping chickens wasn't necessarily on my radar like 25 years ago. Ouch,
Yeah.
that hurts.
Yeah. I get it.
It was a fun day when the 20th anniversary of the day I went to boot camp went and passed. I'm like, crap, I could have retired today.
I am right there with you. Middle-aged with chickens over here.
You mentioned selling eggs, or the egg shortage of 20 in 2022. And okay, I remember that. I also remember reading a news story, 6, 9 months before that, about how like there were several layer barns, like 100,000 chicken layer barns, that they had to euthanize all the chickens because, some avian flu disease or some weird bird flu or some crap. I don't
Yeah.
remember, but I remember reading that and being like, huh, well, that'll set up a egg shortage eventually. It just takes like 9 months for those things to show up in the market. And I think that's not the only time that's happened. And
Yeah.
where we're getting caught up is, so now I'm a beef guy, so bear with me. I remember the Tyson fire in 2019. The big they had a fire at
Yes.
their Holcomb plant in 2019, and that's a plant that runs like 6,000 a day. Big plant.
Yeah.
And that really that caused some major disruptions in beef prices. But that was a short term, and I was like, those prices were just reactionary because there wasn't really any effect on supply because they keep so much in cold storage. If we look back at the numbers, there is zero dip in supply. It was just a panic based on news. And so similarly, we see, I guess what I'm saying is we misinterpret the supply chain. We think that like just because a 20,000 head dairy burned up in Texas, there might be a little milk shortage. No, not really. It takes months and months and months to see that in the marketplace. another good example would be in 2020 when COVID shut the world down and shut down shipping. I mean, we basically turned the country off for 2 weeks, stopped all supply chains, and then when they restart, they're not always working correctly. And some of the things that were imported, we still have had them because they're in warehouses, but there's no more coming. And that's what people aren't understanding is the lag between when this news comes out and when they actually, and when that thing actually starts to affect the economy, it's 6 or 9 months later, and our short attention spans, we forget. We forget what caused that.
Yeah. I think, you know, I can get really far that down that rabbit hole. Like I really can. What I will say is that just having some control over your own food, I think it's the goal. And it's not just like for me, there's that aspect of it. You know, just how unhealthy our food system is, how fragile it is, how dangerous it could be, you know, just security wise, like it's not a good system. But beyond that, when we connect with nature, just us as individuals, it does something to us. When I learned about chicken keeping, and certainly when I was researching for my book and I was looking, you know, I went into my ancestry, I was talking to my mom about my great grandmother and how they did the whole chicken thing and all this. I learned so much about myself and where I come from. And in doing that, my outlook on other people, my compassion for other people, my empathy for other people expanded. And I think that that is very, very important. It's a huge aspect of it. And I think we all are kind of suffering from this, the severance from that. I mean, you have farming in your family for generations, but most of us have been disconnected from that. In my family, it was industrialization, and it was a terrible civil war that happened in Guatemala because of bananas. the CIA went in and they did a coup, and that sparked a civil war that almost lasted 40 years.
The CIA destabilizing a friendly nation? Surely that would
wild,
never happen.
Isn't it? It's just wild. But anyway, another rabbit hole I could go down. But that, what that did is it, in my, just looking at my family and in my ancestry, that severed me from my culture and from, you know, when you sever somebody from their food, from where it comes from, that's an automatic severance of their culture because it's such a huge part of who they are.
Yes.
And so I feel like my whole life I've just kind of been at the effect of that, you know, of this kind of common traumatic event. And no matter who you are, no, it doesn't matter if you are from Guatemala, if you're from, you know, wherever, if you're from Ireland or whatever, wherever, so many of us suffer from that same severance if we look into our history. And so when you learn about that, you start to see, okay, wait a minute, you know, I'm looking at everybody else like they're the enemy, but something has been done to all of us. And when we get even just to get a little piece of that back, just by raising a few chickens or growing a garden or something, I really feel like there's something that happens, some level of awareness that can happen when we kind of get that, we take back that part of ourselves. So, yeah, I can get really deep with the chicken thing. I told you.
Okay. And you started me thinking about some interesting things. You talked about, you know, the CIA went into Guatemala and started trouble over bananas, over food.
Yes.
I can't help but think what the U.S. government did to the Plains Indians in the 1870s. We can't beat the Comanches, Apaches, and the Plains tribes in a stand-up fight, so we're just going to murder all the buffalo so they don't have anything to eat.
Yeah.
And I wonder how many other cases of things similar to that we can find across the world where we're going to control the people, we're going to control the food.
Yes.
Or we're going to control the food so we can control the people. And
or control the resources. You know, we take the resources out from under them. And that is how we control them. And what happens is that those people become divided. So let's say, you know, a foreign interest comes into a country. They take over the government. They cause a division, an uprising. The people are fighting each other and they don't understand. They don't realize that their resources are being taken out from under them, from all of them, not, you know, not one side or the other, but from all of them. And well, we've done that to a lot of Latin America. So, and then, you know, I look at how we are right now. I look at how divided our country is right now. And I can't help but ask myself, are we doing the same thing to ourselves? You know, we're all fighting. We're all mad at each other. We're all looking at each other like they're the enemy. And in the meantime, what is being taken out from under all of us?
Taking away the food, taking away our health, taking away ownership. So I was sitting here thinking while you're talking, they herd us all into cities so they can control the land because they know what's best. They give us bread and circuses to keep us distracted from what's really going on, present us with an A-B choice that's easy to generate outrage so they can play one side off the other.
Yes.
And do whatever they want on the fringes, which leads to apathy in the population, which leads to governments and monopolies taking more and more control, which is that's kind of where we are. And it's just more severance from the natural world. And I like that term. I like that severance from the natural world. I like that term because the more we're connected to the natural world, the less people have a tendency to want to participate in a large urban area. Right? Yeah.
We're just participating in hating each other when we're more connected with the natural world, because that's actually the connection with who we are. We are part of the natural world, but we don't see that. We have ourselves separate from it. So what I would encourage people to do, even if they're in the middle of the city, you know, I mean, have a piece of the natural world that you can connect with daily. And that really happened when I started to see how important that was when COVID happened. And when that happened, I had already been writing my book. I had a lot of the bones of the book already written. But, you know, in the initial stages when nobody knew what was going on, you know, I didn't know what was going on. Like, I was scared. I would go out into the chicken yard and be like, you know, that was like my solace. That was my escape. And then all of a sudden, everyone is told that they have to stay inside, which is survivable if you have a backyard. But if you live in an apartment building, imagine the children that couldn't go outside, the people that couldn't go to the park. They had no connection with the natural world and what that does to someone. And I was really upset that we weren't thinking, it was like this just forgotten, we just have forgotten half of the country, you know, like people that were like, oh, I'm fine. I can go in my backyard. I can order food. Well, somebody's bringing you that food. And also there are people that they can't do anything. They can't go anywhere. There are children that are stuck inside that can't climb a tree. Like That's not good. And so in that moment, when I saw what was happening, I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to go back and change a whole bunch of stuff that I wrote, because everybody needs to be able to have access to this kind of experience. And so I made a lot of the focus of the book making chicken keeping more accessible, regardless of where you live. You know, I mean, I've lived in cities for a big part of my life. I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I was in Hollywood. I was going to like parties and, you know, doing the whole thing. So I'm not like against that. I just think we have to have balance, and we can't lose. Like a lot of people will say, go out into nature and disconnect. You're disconnecting, you know, from all your appliances. No, you are connecting. That's what's happening. You know, to disconnect means that that's the default, is that your connection is happening with all of these devices. No.
So we reframe that. Instead of we're going to disconnect from our devices, we need to reconnect with nature.
Yes. Yes.
I like it. I like it. So when you say chickens will save the world, or can save the world, can you start to unpack that somehow? Why do you say that?
I believe that they saved my world. You know, like I said at the beginning, I was really struggling. I don't say that chickens cure postpartum depression, because but I will say that when I started to keep chickens, I started to heal. I started to, like I said earlier, you know, discover who I am, where I come from. I started to reconnect with the earth, with nature, all of that. And that's really where it begins. You know, if you want to change the world, which I did, I've always wanted that from a little tiny kid. I would be like, you know, because I came from parents who had experienced war, I had a very early knowledge of what that is and how it affects someone. And so I always wanted that to end. You know, I always strived for there to be peace. And, you know, then you grow up and you realize how complicated that can seem, like that kind of a task in today's world. But I think more important than anything, starting with yourself and finding peace in your own life, you know, even if it's just for a few minutes a day, connecting with nature, connecting with something that is natural beyond yourself, you know, I think that's a great place to start. And it's just a small step, but it could be really meaningful. Certainly on a grander scale, if everyone had this experience. And I talk about chickens, but if you can have a garden or whatever, that would really change things. It really would. I mean, you see people like, you know, veterans that have been through traumatic experiences. There are programs. There's a program in my where I live, not too far from me, where they have a farm. It's called Growing Veterans, and they have a farm, and they come and they work the land. And there is something healing, like literally physically healing in the soil. And I think we can all get a piece of that, some healing in our life, because we all have stuff. We all have things that we're healing from, you know. And I just would like to see everybody have an opportunity for that. So yeah, saving the world one chicken at a time. That's what we say.
Okay.
In Chickenlandia.
Let's see, there definitely is something to be said about the connection between humans and livestock, whether it's cows or chickens. Probably, there's probably something there with like pigs and sheep and goats too, but I'm not really into those. But sometimes there's just a very, very unique piece that you get by just sitting outside for an hour and just watching your chickens and watching what they're doing and trying to understand how, what they're doing and why they're doing it and when. Like,
yes.
Why did that one just run across the yard and stop? What did he see over there? What'd she see over there? Why'd she just haul ass 100 yards across the yard to go stand there by herself? You know, what are those guineas yelling at? Why are they making noise?
Lord knows.
I mean, they're guineas. I mean, they just, that's what they do. They just randomly make noise like, oh, hey, there's a airplane 400 miles away in the sky. Let's, you know, go crazy. Truck drove by on the highway. You know, let's yell about that for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I did. You know, that was the one thing that really surprised me when I first got chickens. And I became very, very passionate about them in a very short period of time. But, you know, I had them, I started out with the baby chicks, and then they started to grow up, and I would go outside and I just feel peace among them. It was like a meditation for me, like this kind of daily thing that I did. I could go outside, I have chronic pain. And so I'd go outside and that pain would be lifted at least while I'm outside. You know, maybe I'm angry about something, I go outside. By the time I've been out there for a few minutes, I'm singing songs to the chickens or whatever. But when I started to talk to other people and connect with other people about their experience with chicken keeping, I would say, you know, I didn't really realize how much peace I would feel in the chicken yard. And they'd be like, yeah, I feel it too. So I did a TEDx talk at Western Washington University in 2017. And that talk was called I Dream of Chickens. And
I watched that this morning, by the way.
Oh, you did. But in that talk, I say, you know, I am feeling peace in the chicken yard while, you know, simultaneously understanding that there's someone that is perceivably very different from me on the other side of the world. You know, they're, you know, however many miles away, but we have this thing in common where we're out with our chickens and we're experiencing peace. And that's, you know, another thing that I just want everybody to have. And not everybody, you know, sometimes I'll be talking about that with people and they'll be like, what are you talking about, lady? You know, like, it's chickens, like it's not that deep. But for me, it is. And I know I'm not alone. I know there are a lot of people out there that have that same feeling, you know, yeah. And maybe it's not about chickens. Maybe it's about cattle or something else, you know, but, yeah, I wish that as a species, we would focus on the things we have in common a little bit more.
So one of the thoughts I'm having right now is nature hates a vacuum. And the only thing the next thing she really doesn't like is kind of a monoculture.
Oh, yeah.
And off subject, but that's just how my brain works sometimes. What would like a 50,000 head cattle feedlot look like with enough chickens to process their manure? Because that's one of the things that chickens do really, really well, especially when they're in a pasture setting around other animals. They go to those pies and those manure pads and they disassemble them and they find what's still good in there to eat.
Yes. Delicious. Yeah, that's what they do. It's a very important job.
And, you know, in the pasture, like, and granted, I don't do pasture chickens. It's just, I can't figure it out to make it work for me. And anyway, they'll go out and they'll overhaul those cow pies and they're eating the parasites. They're eating the flies. So it baffles me that we'll continue to use a poison in a jug before we'll look at a biological solution for a biological problem.
Yeah. And it's, you know, most of my audience, they have pet chickens. That is the majority of my audience. And which is fine. And I will, you know, full disclosure, I have like a chicken rescue. Like basically I have chickens. I've got chickens that are messed up in some way, you know, they're chronically ill or they've got 7 toes and one of them's curled under the other one. that is just what I have done. I feel like chickens have saved me. And so in return, I save them. But I do not tell everybody, you know, this is what you must do. You could never eat your chickens. You could never let your chickens get eaten by a predator. You know, I mean, nobody wants that to happen, but it is something that happens in a pasture setting.
Even here in the yard, granted, we live out in the country pretty far, coyotes are going to get, they're going to get a share every year. Birds are going to get a share every year.
In the city, forget it. You've got raccoons. Like they're apes.
raccoons are terrible. Bones.
You know, they are very smart. And so there's predators everywhere. You know, that happens. So I'm constantly kind of trying to bring balance back to this conversation of like, whether you keep chickens as pets or whether you have them as just like they're working for you and you have an egg business or whatever, try and think of things as in as natural a way as possible. So, for instance, I had someone recently that was like, look, how do I disinfect the chicken yard? I'm moving some chickens. They're buying a new property. They wanted to disinfect the chicken coop just in case there was any disease in there, which is like totally, that's completely reasonable. And they were like, well, how do I do the yard? And I get it because these are folks that they really don't want to lose any of their chickens. And I completely understand that. I don't want to lose any of my chickens, but I have to look at it in a balanced way of like, okay, if I go into this yard and I disinfect it, what damage am I doing beyond damaging any possible pathogens that are in the yard? You know, there is a whole ecosystem that I don't see that exists in that soil that is very important for the health of your chickens, not just your chicken flock that you have, but the future of that soil. So future generations of people and animals that are going to be on that land. So I will tell people it is possible that you could lose, you know, one or two of your chickens. You're probably not going to lose, even if you have disease go through your flock. You know, we have this idea, oh, everyone's going to die or I have to kill all of my chickens. That comes from factory farming.
Yes.
Because it's all about the bottom line. You know, it's like, oh, you know, some of these chickens are sick. The egg production is down. We have to cull the entire flock. And it could be millions of birds, you know.
But, which leads to an egg shortage 6 months later.
Yeah, and it'll say in the news, oh, 1.5 million birds succumbed to avian influenza. No, they didn't. But they were killed. It wasn't avian influenza that killed them. Maybe a few of them died from that, and then they killed the entire flock. So let's think about things as they really are, you know, not necessarily how they're being presented to us. So yeah, now I can, you know, I'm losing my train of thought because whenever I talk about factory farming, I just get all, you know, the feathers ruffle. But
I know the feeling. I mean, you start thinking about everything that's wrong, and that's all you want to do is talk about and be like, "This is bad."
Yeah, but
like I said, they're run by a lot of really good people that are just trying to feed their family and trying to do the best they can, even though they may know deep down that keeping animals like this is not right.
Yeah. But you know, you have to choose between, you know, feeding your family, taking care of your family, or, you know, I mean, that's a tough choice. And a lot of people don't understand that, but it's real for a lot of people. Anyway, I can't remember where I was going with the person that was like, how do I disinfect the yard? And so I,
the easy answer is you don't.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said. I said, you don't, you know, you don't, what you do is you build resilience in your flock. And the way that you do that is to give them access to the natural world, because that's where they're supposed to be. They're supposed to have contact with all the things, all the microbes and all the creepy crawlies that are in the microbiome of the soil. They need to have access to that. And if they don't have access to that, they will lose resilience. And if you take away that opportunity for them to have that, not only will that generation of chickens lose resilience, but future generations of chickens will lose resilience. So yeah, it's like, I kind of think of myself as like a liaison between like a very, I don't know how you would call it, like a farming situation where it's like, I've got chickens. They are eating my compost pile. They are out in pasture, working on the cow patties. And then the people that are like, I have 12 silkies, you know, living in the, in my backyard, and I love them and they're my pets. And I completely relate with both of that. And I'm just, I just kind of work between in the middle somewhere, to try and get people to just raise chickens as naturally as possible. And for the health of not just the chicken's future, but for our future as well. Did that even make sense?
yeah, it makes sense. And I'm trying to bridge it here in my head. We like to focus on the soil. Whether we're focusing on soil to grow potatoes or grow chickens. Like that's the lens that a lot of our decisions here at the house, and you know, all my decisions on the ranch are kind of run through. It's like, ultimately, if I do this, is this going to be good for the soil?
Yeah.
Because soil is so important. And maintaining the life in the soil, maintaining healthy life in the soil, we haven't paid near enough attention to it in agriculture for the last forever, I guess. Yeah. And it's just now that, you know, we're starting to pay attention to the, you know, soil and soil function and mineral cycling and water cycling and making sure that our soil is healthy and has a healthy population of microbes and fungi instead of just being inert planting material, inert planting aggregate.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and chickens, you know, I talk to guys that run chickens with cows, run chickens with pigs, and, you know, like you just have chickens. And I think chickens are kind of like, oh, my friend Seth Itzkin likes to say that cows are soil carbon heroes. And okay, to some extent they are, but there's a ladder effect, right? And we can't ignore chickens being a little closer toward the bottom of the food chain. They have a very, very high bypass ratio in their intestinal tract. Like, very high. A lot of what goes in comes right out the back end. And I've watched dung beetles go past a cow pat to roll up chicken poop. So dung beetles will roll up chicken poo and they'll cart that stuff off too. I guarantee it'll happen.
They know what's up. They know.
Yeah.
What's up.
They know where the good stuff's at. Here in the yard, like we feed our dogs too much like processed dog food. We're trying to get away. We're trying to move away from that gradually. But yeah, the dung beetles, they ignore that stuff and they go for the chicken poop.
Yeah. That's so funny. That's like a National Geographic, you know, episode right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, There's only so much time you can spend talking about dung beetles before your audience starts going, I'm just going to log off now.
Yeah, I think, you know, what I was thinking of before, just talking about kind of being the liaison between like farming and like having pet chickens. A lot of the pet chicken people will be like, well, my chicken got into a horse patty. You know, is that bad? Or my chicken, you know, sometimes I'll get into dog poop and, oh, is that bad? And I'm like, well, just try and remember that there are chickens, like that is their purpose. You know, they're out there on pasture and their purpose is going through this kind of stuff and kind of organizing it and redistributing it to the earth in a way that is going to be more beneficial. So that's just, you know, one example of how I try to get people to think about it. Even if you have chickens as pets or whatever, they are serving a purpose. They have a purpose in this world, and you can get closer to that while still loving them and, you know, buying treats for them and giving them a bath and, you know, whatever you want to do, putting a diaper on them and put him in front of the TV. You know? So it's
have
all
you seen
good
those people that put pants on their chickens?
I just thought the chickens put the pants on one leg at a time. I didn't know that people were doing it.
Well, a chicken with pants walking around is, it's kind of hilarious if you've
like,
never seen it.
Why is it so funny?
I don't, because it's I can't say the word, incongruous?
Yeah, I guess. I think there's one where it's like, it's one of those, I'm sure it's like in India or Pakistan or something where they have a lot of the, these roosters. I cannot think of the name right now. A seal roosters. They have like, they're tall and they have like these long legs. And there's one where the rooster is wearing pants and he's walking through. It's like he looks like a teacher in a classroom. Like he's walking through this high pants on and he's like making sure all the students are doing what they're supposed to do. But you know, it's like one of those roosters with those super duper long legs. Pants fit him perfect.
Okay. What's your favorite breed of chicken?
I tell all my chickens I love them equally.
Well, they're not here right now and they don't listen to the podcast, so you can tell me.
I really love itty bitty tiny chickens. Old English Game Bantams, I think, would be my favorite. They're like, you know, a few ounces. Those kind of chickens could live in the wild. Like they really have like part of themselves in the wild, but then they can also be super tame and they're just like really tiny and chatty and they lay one egg a month and they live to be 15. And I also love anything with a naked neck.
Okay.
And I will fight someone. Like if they say naked necks are ugly, I will physically fight that person.
Okay.
Because they are the cutest chickens in the world. So yeah, but I love all chickens. You know, it's like they all have a unique personality, which was very surprising to me because I just thought, oh, chickens, you know, I'm going to get some chickens. And then it's like, oh, wow, like this one is this way and this one makes a certain sound and this one always comes to me at a certain time. And that was a surprise to me, the how individual they were.
We have a couple of red chickens that if you leave a door open and they're close, you'll have chickens on the other side of that door. And they don't give a crap what door it is, if it's a car door or the front door to the house. I think I was unloading stuff from one of the road trips I got home from. I pull up and there's chickens in the front yard. Normally they hang out in the back, but they're up in the front yard, kind of on a tour. And I had the front, I, you know, locked the front door open because I had like three loads of crap to bring in. Well, I'm going back out to get the last load, and I walk back into the front room, and there's this red chicken just standing there in the middle of the floor looking around like, huh, this is weird. How did I get in here? I don't see any bugs. There's no grass. So it was a little interesting trying to get the chicken back out the front door, because that's the first time that one's happened to me. Normally it happens like the back door where we keep the chicken feed and where she's like always going in and out to go feed the chickens. Normally it's down there, and it's kind of okay because there's usually chicken feed spilled on the floor. So she'll open the door, take the stuff out to, you know, go feed the rest of them. And there's like one or two of these little red ones that as soon as that door opens, they run in and they're the floor cleanup crew.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So she's been training them to come inside, and it was no surprise that one just wandered in the front door. They've been in my truck before. When you leave, you can't leave a door or window open around here because you'll have a chicken or a cat in your car.
I love it. Love it.
So what should people know? Like, what should people know about keeping chickens that don't already keep chickens? I guess what's the most basic thing?
Well, in my book, I have at the very beginning, not the very beginning, but towards the beginning, I have the 6 rules for mindful chicken keeping. And I use the word rules very loosely because I don't believe in a lot of rules. You know, I think there's the Chickenlandia way, but that's not the only way of keeping chickens. I think we should do what comes naturally to us. As long as they're not in a factory farm, I am happy. But I do have these kind of guidelines to so that you can have a better experience. And the number one rule is follow your heart, which I think, you know, some people might hear and they would be like, oh, that's, you know, that kind of sounds silly or whatever. But actually what I'm saying is I'm reminding people that this is a practice that should be the most natural thing in the world for us. It is something that human beings have been doing for literally thousands of years. And when you get started with chickens, a lot of times, you know, people will do a lot of research and then they'll get the chickens and they'll start to have this experience and something will happen and they don't know what to do. And they will go to the internet to find the answer of what they need to do. And they are going to be bombarded with lots of different information. And a lot of that information is going to be conflicting. And what I will, this is just something that will happen because you have a flock, and a flock is not, you know,
a flock is more than just the individual animals.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, every flock is different. Every coop is different. Every chicken yard is different. So you're going to have like all these, your experience will be different from even your neighbor. So when you come up against something like that and you don't know what to do, what I want you to do is listen to your gut. Because more than likely, that will be the right thing to do. Rather than listening to what someone says to you on Facebook, oh, you have to do it like this or else you're doing it wrong or whatever, and that doesn't feel right, that's probably not what you need to do. And you will make mistakes. That is going to happen. You will make mistakes. Some of those lessons that you learn keeping chickens are going to be very difficult. But that's okay. You know, that's how we learn. That's how we move forward. I think ultimately when you kind of train that muscle of like, I am going to listen to what my gut tells me, not only is that going to be super valuable to you in the chicken yard, but it is very valuable to you when you go out into the world. And certainly if children are involved in you taking care of the chickens, you know, they also learn how to exercise that muscle. So I think I would start there rather than, you know, all the basic chicken keeping things, you know, here's how you set up your brooder and all that stuff. I talk about that. I've got tons of videos about that. I, you know, my book has all the stuff in it about basic chicken keeping. I've got an online course, got all that stuff in it. But ultimately, it's like when people come up against these scenarios and they don't know what to do, I think it's really important to kind of have that foundation of like, I remember that this is an ancient practice that I am doing and that it is in my DNA. It is in my heritage. And deep down, I can find what to do.
When were chickens domesticated?
Oh, there's argument about this. I don't think we completely know, 8 to 10,000 years ago, somewhere in Asia. But then there's like, it's like it kind of popped up at the same time, at least in our historical records.
In like different places. Tropical Southeast Asia?
I would imagine, yeah. I would imagine.
It doesn't seem like... Doesn't seem like chickens are going to do well somewhere where it freezes often. I mean, outside.
No, that took some selective breeding to get to the chickens that are much more hardy in the winter. But yeah, in the jungles of Asia, you know, the red jungle fowl, that's where it started. Beyond that, the T-Rex.
Velociraptor, T-Rex. I mean, I can buy it. I'm not going to argue that chickens don't have a little bit of T-Rex in them. I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah. So yeah, and originally, you know, they were probably bred for fighting. You know, that's probably why people originally started keeping them, but then eventually for meat and then eventually for eggs. The chicken that lays hundreds of eggs a year, that is fairly modern. That is not normally what birds would do in the wild. You know, that took a lot of breeding for them to get that way. And then as a result of that, they have very high nutritional needs, especially the production breeds that we have. And a lot of times when you have them, the way that you lose them is from like the reproductive issues that they get into just because their bodies are working so hard to lay all these eggs.
Okay. I'm sensing you don't really like Cornish cross chickens a whole lot.
It's not that I don't like Cornish cross, and I would never like demonize somebody or say you shouldn't do that, you know.
But you can't take one and put it outside and expect it to forage on its own and be
okay.
Yeah,
even raising them on pasture, like that's, of course, a much better life for them. You know, for the few weeks that they have to live is a much better experience. So if you're going to do it, you know, it's great to see like these hoop houses and people have them outside on pasture and they're walking around. You know, eventually they get so big they can't walk around. And so I don't love that, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, that's great. But I also, you know, that is a billion times better than the alternative, which is, you know, or at least the most popular alternative to that, which is not only are these animals, you know, they're, oops. Are you still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, I don't know what just happened.
I'm still here and we're still going.
Okay. you know, not only do these animals only live a few weeks and, you know, eventually they kind of are scooting around everywhere because they're so big. But they're doing that in a factory farm setting, which is absolutely wretched. It's just wretched. And, you know, do I wish people had a different... you know, expected a different experience when they sat down to have like a chicken breast over their salad. I would love for them to, you know, not expect to have that huge chicken breast, but that is where we're at right now. And so working within that system, I would say, hey, if you're going to do it, it's great to know where your food comes from and to do it on your own, you know? And I'm certainly not going to say to people, oh, well, don't buy chicken from the grocery store, from whatever, you know, I mean, there's people that's what they have to do. They got to go to, They've got to go to Walmart and buy the big package of chicken breast because that's what they can afford. If you can afford something different, do something different. Place that vote with your dollar. But don't demonize the people that can't.
For everything else in the world, dollars for dollars, chicken in the grocery store is about as cheap as you're going to get for protein.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a chicken related headline that I just remembered.
Okay.
So, and this episode will come out like next Monday, so this won't be out of date. Okay. Chick-fil-A, nationwide chicken restaurant. I've probably eaten at Chick-fil-A once in the last 25 years, just for clarity. So they've been sourcing their chicken antibiotic free, and that's been one of their things. Like, we have antibiotic free chicken. I think it was yesterday they announced that they were no longer going to make the no hormones ever claim. It was going to be no hormones or no antibiotics significant to humans.
Okay. So what does that mean?
Right. What does that even mean? I mean, antibiotic. Let's look at the word there. Anti means against. Biotic means life.
So here's a question. You have Baytril. Baytril is the same thing as Cipro. So Baytril is like the animal. I think I could be totally off here, but I know that one of the antibiotics that is given to chickens, it certainly like in a veterinarian setting would be Baytril. Baytril is the same thing as Cipro. Cipro can really cause harm to someone. I know that because I was damaged by it. So is the name change, like if you say it's not significant to humans, are you saying that would not be used on the market because it's the same as this antibiotic? Or are you saying, well, this is the one that is marketed for animals, so it's not significant to humans?
I'm not real sure, to be honest. And
I hope it's more than that. But even that, it's like, how does that mean that it doesn't cause harm? It doesn't mean that.
Right.
It just means that this is not something we use for people. I don't believe that we would know, I just don't trust, I don't trust.
The trust seems to have evaporated out of the food system, and COVID is shining a spotlight on that.
Yes. And it's funny because, we've got in this country, we've got, this two-party system, and they appear to be opposite of each other, and there's all this fighting and everything. And, when COVID happened, there was like these two sides. And it's funny because for me, I'm coming at it as somebody that, my parents were from a country that was absolutely torn apart by U.S. interest, by the CIA. It was torn apart. Like, the country was destroyed. And so that's where my mistrust comes from, and where I start to ask questions, and where I start to go down that rabbit hole, as opposed to because I'm on one side or the other politically. So it's an interesting place to be. I'll put it that way. And I think there are places where politically I would differ a lot with some of the people that I talk to and some of the people that follow me. But when it comes to mistrust of the government, I'm right there because of where I come from. That's how I was raised.
Trust the government. Trust the government. Just ask the American Indians how that worked out.
Oh.
All right. Where can people get a hold of you? What's the name of your book? Where are you at on social media?
I keep forgetting to bring my book. You know, I have like, I always have the book here so I can show the cover of it and all that. And of course it's not here. So, my biggest platform is my YouTube channel. It is called Welcome to Chickenlandia. That's where people usually can find me. You know, my persona on there is the president of Chickenlandia. We didn't really get into that much, but, so yeah, that's where people find me originally. I do have a podcast. It's called Bawk Talk. That's BAWKTAWK. And I have an online course called Backyard Chickens 101, a chicken course for everyone. And that's basically like a beginner or intermediate course, especially if you want to keep chickens and if you're kind of, you want to lean more natural, you can start there. And then I have my book that came out last year. It is called Let's All Keep Chickens because I want everybody to keep chickens. And you can get that on, you know, the dreaded Amazon. You can get it Barnes and Nobles. You can go to Tractor Supply and get it. Preferably go to your local bookstore and ask them to order it for you. And all of this, and then I'm on all the social media. It's Instagram, all that stuff. All of this you can find on my website, welcometochickenlandia.com. You can get to all of it from there. So if you only remember one thing, remember that.
I try to do a pretty good job with show notes. I'll get as much of that in there as I can.
Perfect.
So, okay, question.
Yes.
Is there a play, if somebody wanted to buy your book and you to receive the maximum royalty, where do they go buy your book?
Oh, I hate to say this, but like where it helps me the most is for people to go to Amazon and buy it.
Because I was hoping you were not going to say that.
I know. I like, I'm feeding the monster. I really am. It's because they're the ones like they got like the strongest algorithm. They're the ones that like keep track of everything. So unfortunately, like, and do a, and make a review. Like if you go to Amazon, you buy the book and do a review, that helps me the most. Obviously, if it's a favorable review, it's going to help me the most.
Reviews do help.
Tractor Supply has it. You can go to Tractor Supply or you could go to your local bookstore. You know, and buy it at full price, and that would be great for me.
Okay. I was going to say something just a second ago, but I forgot what it was.
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. I was trying to interrupt you.
We could do this all day.
Yeah. All right, we need to get going. What do you want to end with?
Keep on chicken on. You know, don't get too down on things. You know, I know we talked about a lot of bummery things today, but there is hope. There is always hope. And if you feel worried, if you're scared, if you don't know about the future, you have anxiety about it, go out to the chicken yard and you'll feel better.
I like it. One last thing. If you could do me a favor and hold up the number of fingers with how many chickens are in your background.
Oh gosh. Let's see.
I think there's, I don't want to say the number out loud. Cause I kind of have a plan with this. I'm going to get people see to watch the one? Video. Okay. I see that one. So now we're at like there.
There's one there. There's one there. Is that might be that's something else. I don't know. There's one there and there's one there. And for those of you that are listening, like I have chicken stuffies in the background. And then I have like chicken art and there's probably other. Oh, here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Okay. And then, so what are we? Is it like,
okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with that. Oh wait, there's one in the okay eight.
Eight. So there's
oh,
eight.
And those two mugs have chickens on them. 8, 9, 10, and I think there's another one here. 11.
Okay.
12. Oh gosh. Yeah. 12 and 13. There's a chicken on the little birdhouse.
13.
We'll go with that.
I love it. All right, Dahlia, thank you for your time today, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was a great conversation.
Yep. Yep. We'll have to do it again sometime.
I would love that.
Yep. We'll work on that. All right, gang. Have a great week. See you next week.